Podcasting from the beautiful Mile High City, you're listening to the Do It Again podcast, the official podcast of Scientific Wrestling, the undisputed leader in no-holds-barred, catch-as-catch-can wrestling. Here's your host, Jake Shannon.
To the Do It Again podcast, the official podcast of Scientific Wrestling, the undisputed leader in no-holds-barred catch-as-catch-can wrestling. I've got another great guest. I've really been trying to pull out all the stops. I don't know if I can keep up this pace of really great guests. I'm going to do my best, and today is definitely a highlight for me. I've got on the other line a man that probably doesn't need much of an introduction, especially to the scientific wrestling community, and that's Josh Barnett. So I'd like to welcome Josh to the show. Hey, Josh, how you doing?
Good to talk to you as always, Jake.
Hey, so are you in a paper cutting factory right now?
A paper cutting factory?
I don't know. That's all I can hear.
Really? I have no idea. I'm actually just driving around in a rented Hyundai Tucson. It's a lovely little vehicle for a tiny SUV, and it is doing the job while my Challenger is at the body shop, because someone decided that a bright Hemi orange car was the most easy thing to back into in a parking lot.
Oh no. I'll tell you, man, yeah, that's a rough one. I'm having a hard time picturing you in the Hyundai. You said it's a Tucson? What is that?
Tucson. It's a little mini SUV thing, and honestly, it's nice little driving car. It gets good gas mileage, four doors, obviously. And it's got this little heads up display thing that has this option called Android Auto, where you can download this app that's an official Android app to your phone. Then you hook it into a USB port in the car, and then the screen that's in the car for all your display stuff. Boom, there goes everything off of your phone, goes onto that, your GPS, your music, every app in your phone that is compatible. Like, geez.
Wow. Cool. Yeah, you know, I've got, following your lead, I bought myself a Challenger in 2016. I didn't get anything crazy. I got a good deal on it because it's all hail damaged and shit. So they gave me like 10 grand. I was like, oh, cool, you're in my price range. But I do love the car. However, my wife has a Kia Sedona, and this is my roundabout way to get into the fact that the tech in Korean-made cars is like off the charts. This Kia, it like blows anything I've seen away in like Lexus, you know, like these high-end vehicles. It's pretty amazing what they could do today. I mean, pretty soon, I guess we're not even going to have to drive.
Oh, that sounds horrible. I hate that. I was just talking to somebody about that the other day, and I go, look, self-driving cars, I will vote every measure I can to keep that off the road, because I'm way too much of a fan of science fiction. I've read too much.
Yeah.
Too many movies.
Yeah.
I just hate the idea of, because, you know, what's the progression? Okay. Freight trucks all are auto driving, right? Then you get delivery trucks are all self-driving. Then you go, all right, well, we can't allow you to be on the road with all these self-driving vehicles. You're going to be the problem.
Yeah.
So then yep. It's like, oh, now all my cars have to self-drive. And then the self-driving cars, it turns into maximum overdrive. The first person they take out, and we're screwed.
The thing I love about L.A., is he was standing behind me in line at LAX one time. It was the most surreal thing. I'm like, holy shit, I had to look like five times. You don't want to be an asshole because everybody does that. But I'm like, that is fucking Emilio Estevez. This guy, like Young Guns, like, oh, that's funny. That's funny. Now, speaking of, okay, wait a minute.
He was a legit wrestler. He actually wrestled, I guess, in high school.
I heard some about that. Yeah. 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 Let me ask you something. Okay, let's cut to the chase. We're already heading into this political territory. Let's just throw caution to the wind here. What do you say? Can I count you on board for McMahon Lashley versus Trump in 2020? Because they did so great. They did really fucking great. They shaved Actually, they didn't do so well. I guess McMahon got shaved that time. But I know everybody would love to see fucking Lashley and McMahon fucking shave Trump this time.
I have all the faith in the world in Bobby Lashley. That guy is a total beast. Someone was saying, well, I was giving him some grief on his Instagram account. And I said, and he's like, I'm not afraid of nothing. I have no fear of anything. And I said, oh, except for if I'm hanging around, I take you down. And someone's like, oh, well, yeah, that or Brock. And I go, actually, my money's on Lashley. I bet you Lashley can take Brock down. In a contest of pure takedowns, I bet Lashley beats him.
I mean, I didn't meet the guy until you introduced me to him. And I've never seen or met Brock Lesnar, but holy moly, man. Lashley looks exactly like something out of Marvel Comics. That guy is superhuman for sure.
Full on, man. He's a super athlete. And while Brock does have some serious size, he's probably 40, maybe 50 pounds bigger than Lashley, if you can believe that.
Wow.
And he's a hell of an athlete himself. Bobby is so fast, so strong, and he is so agile on his feet. I would not be surprised in the least if Bobby smoked him on takedowns.
Okay, now hold on. Like, I was going through I was doing notes, because I actually do take this serious enough to write down some notes. Not really for any other reason than I live in Colorado and I smoke a lot of weed and I'm getting old. My memory isn't quite what it used to be. So I'm doing these notes. I've known you since probably 2004 or 2005. I think it had to be 2004 because I remember I met you at the Abu Dhabi's in Long Beach and you were there with Matt Hume and you and I had already talked online, but we'd never actually met in person. So I remember it was 2004. And I've been in the car and done long road trips, and usually we talk crazy philosophy so much that it puts Wade or whoever else is in the car asleep usually. But
true.
But there's so much I didn't know about you, and this is really fascinating. So okay, first of all, just a couple stories. Obviously, I know you. You're my friend, but yeah, you're huge in catch wrestling. You're huge in MMA. You're huge in pro wrestling. There's all these things that I'm interested in, so I would obviously know who you are. But like, it's so random. My little 6-year-old, the one I named after Billy Robinson, Billy, he was obsessed with Sharknado, and I'm laying there at bedtime putting him to bed with watching Sharknado 3, and I see you get eaten by a freaking flying shark in Sharknado 3.
This is the life that I have carved out for myself.
That is random.
Art and low budget movies,
dude. That is so fucking random. And then like, what was the other one? The other day I took my daughter Leona, who I kind of roundabout actually named her after Carl because the Flemish lion. I named her. I think Fujinami named his son Leona for the same reasons. I took her to Barnes & Noble. Which, by the way, it's the saddest fucking thing. All these cool stores that I used to like are just shutting down. They're becoming like Blockbuster, just these ghosts of the past. Like, there's hardly any more Barnes & Nobles. Yeah. But I took her there.
It's expensive to keep something like a Barnes & Noble in business anymore because the size of the place, right? I mean, and
yeah.
What's kind of funny is I guess there's maybe even some people that are sitting back being like, ha, ha, ha. Remember when you crushed all the local booksellers?
True.
And now you're getting crushed by Amazon, which in some ways made up of other local booksellers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you're totally right. It's great because I actually came from a independent bookstore, you know, having day jobs and shit.
I would never imagine that. Never. Yeah,
listen, my nerd fucking credentials are strong too, Josh. Yeah, man, they were dying, and actually the used bookstores were dying too a little bit with Amazon, but I think you're right because all the financial reports I read, hence again my nerddom, are showing that like actually independent bookstores are fucking stronger than these chain bookstores, and you're right, it is because Amazon's sourcing them. It's like this interesting relationship now that Amazon's established with the independent booksellers.
It is. It's how I've been able to track down some books, and not just track them down, but being given the option to buy new from Amazon, and then Amazon say, "Hey, we have other, you know, we have used. If you want to buy from these," and going in that, and then even from the used selections, of course, you've got your different grades. But then having the used books go, hey, this is a first print. This one is a blah, blah, blah edition. This one's got this cover that was released. And like, whoa.
Yeah.
I can choose. And I actually bought a couple. I guess I was just inspired. I bought Mishima's Sun and Steel and Ernst Becker's The Nile of Death, but in classic editions.
Wow. So, yeah, it's really, if you're at all a bibliophile, it's a pretty amazing time. You can really get what you want. But so I'm in Barnes & Noble with my daughter. She's looking up. She's like all into Riverdale, so she's getting Archie comics and shit. So I sit down and I see... you know, I go to the sports section because I'm vain and I want to see if they fucking have my books in their sports section, which they never do, which is probably why they're going out of business. But I see this another random Josh Barnett sighting that I didn't expect. It's fucking Shinsuke Nakamura. He has an autobiography. It's signed. I'm like, what the fuck is a signed edition doing in Barnes & Noble? But whatever. I start looking through and I'm like a speed reader. So something that's not dense material, I can get through pretty quick. And at the back, something catches my eye, and it says something like, Josh Barnett is moody. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? So I look up, and there's this whole story how you used to make him mow your lawn or something like that back when he was like in New Japan or something. You show up like in so many places.
Visiting. Yeah, he was training at AMC. I don't know if I made him mow my lawn.
Somebody said that. He said you made him do chores or something, like a young boy or something. I don't know.
I might have made him do chores. But the main thing is I put him on a lifting program and you know, monitored his diet and all that. He ended up coming in fantastic shape. And since Shinsuke's a natural athlete, he's a great wrestler from his base on. Great heart when he gets going into it. You know, he really picked up a lot of what I was teaching him and what Matt Hume worked with him on. And, but the thing was, I know there was some worry from him a little bit, and probably from the office too, that when he got done with camp and went to go fight, he was 196 pounds. And they're like, and he's just like, oh, we got to kayfabe this, man. Heavyweights are 220 or over. And he was super lean, and everyone's like, man, he's in fantastic shape. You know, he's pretty much got abs and everything. And they're just like, yeah, he's 220. Sure he is. And he goes out there, and he mows through Ignashov super easy this time instead of getting stuffed underneath the big guy and having his shot stopped and then getting caught with that knee, which happened the first time. But, I suppose he might think that I'm moody a little bit. But, you know, the thing is I expected a lot out of him, and I knew that it was really needed that he rose to the occasion.
Well, you're known for being a hard coach and an excellent one, but you know, most times I think, if not all the time, those two go hand in hand.
Yeah, it could be. I wouldn't say I'm so much moody, but I am a hard ass.
Yeah, believe me, I know. I see you like everywhere. So then. And I want to, you know, in about 5 minutes here, we're going to have to take a break. But I want to kind of touch on some of this other stuff. So what is this? I didn't even know this. So you were in a movie with Steven Seagal?
Yeah.
What is that?
The videos, so sometimes it's hard to track them down. But,
wait, what is that?
Called Absolution.
And what are you in this movie? What are you? What do you do in this movie?
I play I'm one of the principal bad guys in the film.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so basically, I play a corrupt U.S. embassy head of security at a U.S. embassy. That's what I play. Who's also tied into Vinnie Jones's character, who is a mafioso individual in the Eastern Bloc. So Seagal is a mercenary with his mercenary buddy that's doing a job for the old CIA. And we all end up crossing paths.
Wow. That is crazy, man. That is so awesome, dude. Steven Seagal. I mean, that kind of was like, what? I didn't even know that. I had to go to IMDb. I was looking up some of this stuff.
It's bizarre, man. It's still bizarre to me because, you know, I grew up watching, you know, seeing Above the Law and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you could go back and be like, hey, 12-year-old you, guess what you're going to do someday?
Wow. What? Yeah, that's nuts.
No way. How did that ever happen?
That's so amazing, man. Yeah, You know, one thing, I mean, obviously Victor Henry is blowing it up right now. I mean, he's one hell of an athlete, and he's got a hell of a coach and a team, and UWF USA is, like, really killing it. Alicia is doing well. You've really, I mean, obviously your accolades, everybody who's listened to this probably knows, like, how crazy successful you've been in MMA, you know, from obviously UFC and stuff. But doing crazy stuff like being the only one besides Boss Rutten and Ken and Frank Shamrock to hold both UFC titles and Pancrase titles. Plus all the crazy time when you were just tearing up the jiu-jitsu scene. I mean, everybody knows probably that. And I want to talk about some of that after the commercial break. But you've been really particularly successful in coaching women. In terms of, in MMA, obviously, I think of Megumi, and then in pro wrestling, I think about Shayna and MMA, but, you know, she's having incredible success in pro wrestling as well. So, yes. I mean, what do you attribute that to? What is this, you know, I don't want you to give away the Colonel's secret recipe here, but in broad strokes, what do you think that is about you that's able to really take these people to the next level?
With the women, it's mainly making sure that their hair and nails are done. I break their hair all the time, and I listen to all their problems and make sure to always have chocolate on hand.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, is there a straight answer to that question?
Kind of. I the best answer I could give is that I pay attention. I have a syllabus of sorts that is derived all from my own personal experience and all the training that I have gathered and been privy to all the years from people, from all my coaches, Matt Hume, Eric Paulson, Jim Harrison, Haru Shimanishi, Billy Robinson, Carl Gotch, Inoki, like you name it, man. All the people that I've worked with over the years and all the things that they've instilled and shown me and their different training disciplines and concepts and philosophies. And then me taking all that and amassing that into something that I call, you know, my own approach with my own little flavor added to it. And some of that is also the ability to adjust what is needed per the individual. I mean, you can have this broad concept that you're having everybody work on a regular basis, this concept of what moves and what particular tactics you think should be employed on in general and so on and so forth. These like a standard, a building block, but eventually you got to deal with the athlete on an individual level per their phenotype, per their mindset, the way they fight, and all their little idiosyncrasies.
For the normal people out there, phenotype means like body, like their physical manifestation of their genetic code.
Correct.
Okay, I'm just dumbing it down. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
So you just make you ultimately you can have a team, but everybody has to compete as an individual, and so you must tailor that to that individual, and that involves a lot of listening and a lot of communication. Sometimes it's a matter of you not actually communicating verbally with these people, but even putting them through a little bit of wax on, wax off, and sand the floor, and leading them somewhere that they need to go. But if you told them that they were going to go there, they'd get in their own way. And, you know, it's a little bit of a horse whisper. It's a little bit of just management and taking all the cues and getting this feedback and listening and communicating with these athletes and then being able to create that honest discourse between the two of you that's always open so that you can be as adaptable as need be when that comes around. And some of it's a blend of blending the old school blood and guts, teeth all over the floor, gnarly, like break people down, burn them to ash, and then rebuild them into an unshakable monument, as well as more modern techniques. The idea of setting their weight cuts and their monitoring their diets and their weight conditioning, their strength conditioning work, not to mention setting their programs to peak for their their events and, you know, more scientifically structured training protocols that you might see emerging at the highest levels of professional. And even though the Olympics are not considered professional athletics technically, but, at, you know, taking cues from Olympic level athletes as well. But I don't think there's any one perfect scenario. You gotta build the one that works best for the athlete.
All right. Yeah, that's awesome, man, because you're killing it. You know, I mean,
yeah, we've got eight since creating the UWF USA team specifically, just the creation. I mean, to be honest, if we want to nitpick, this team has been going on even when we were a part of CSW. It just wasn't called that. These were the same core individuals that were training under me directly all the time and competing with me cornering them and setting up their bouts and so on and so forth. But since the split from CSW in December of 2016, so coming up on 2 years or so, well, roughly 2 years worth of the team being together. Has it been that long? Wow. Anyways, we've gathered eight titles.
Wow. Wow.
Amateur and professional. Eight titles. And that's not counting, you know, Shayna Baszler winning titles while she was at CSW training under me, and not counting her NXT title that she, and any of the other pro wrestling titles that she's gathered since training, since me training her to be a pro wrestler.
And not counting Megumi Fuji as well.
Well, yeah, that goes way back. Yeah. not even going that far back. But yeah, since the creation of UWF USA as a team, and mind you, we also are fully integrated with and vice versa with California Mixed Martial Arts, ran by a really good friend and student of mine, Chad George. And together we've been helping hone both our teams and having our teams cooperate and build a great room where they're constantly pushing and helping each other. We've been highly successful working together, and it's been fantastic. And, you know, without CMMA's help, I don't know if we could be as successful as we are. But, you know, that's the thing. When you get people that are as dedicated to the process as we are and that really want to see these athletes get their utmost out of it, good things will come of it.
Yeah, Chad's not only just a great guy, but he's a crazy talented athlete, too.
Very talented. I think he's looking to get back in the cage here this year. But I'm also really looking forward to trying getting him a pro catch wrestling match on one of my ACWA tournament cards. I'm trying to do pro matches here and there. I did one last year with the legendary Luis Ojeda, and I'm really, really thankful for Luis to be able to be a part of that, because you know, both him and I are getting up in age, and you know, I don't know if anybody wants us to do a catch wrestling match with walkers, but the first person to kick one out gets the takedown, I guess.
Yeah, Luis is just a great guy, and super game, and just a cool human being. So I'm really glad that you guys had that match. But Chad, man, I just he's very physically talented, man. That guy's got like balance, speed, power. He's a real guy to watch. We're coming up actually on our first break already. I do want to talk about the show you got coming up, Josh Barnett's Bloodsport. That's where, Newark, New Jersey, right?
No, it's actually going to be in Jersey City. Oh, it's on the other side in NYC.
Okay, Jersey City. What are the dates? The 5th?
April 4th.
The 4th, okay.
It'll be April 4th, and it is available for pay-per-view to watch it at 4 p.m. Eastern on April 4th on Fight TV.
Oh, cool. So if somebody gets the Fight TV app or whatever, they can watch their phone, that kind of thing?
Yep.
Cool. Yes. And then...
And it's $15.
Another thing that's like amazing is it just makes sense. It's very smart that you're doing it since Suzuki's already on the card. I never met him, but Billy always talked about him. There's very few people that Billy, you know, talked about in a positive way. Let's put it that way. And Hideki Suzuki was definitely one of them. So you guys are also doing a seminar together. Where is that going to be in relation to the event?
That is also going to be at the White Eagle Hall in Jersey City.
Oh,
where
good.
We're holding Bloodsport. That's April 3rd, a Wednesday, from 6 to 8 p.m. I believe last I checked, there were 3 open spots left for people to join up. And it's $100 for a 2-hour seminar, but we've limited it down to 20 people because we feel like that's a good number where we can show all the broad strokes, and then per the talent level and also whether their interest is to use it for shooting or working, which meaning, you know, real fights and submission grappling or professional wrestling matches, then we can tailor the techniques and the application again then some. And with 20 people, that's really manageable for both me and Hideki.
Yeah.
And Hideki is Billy Robinson reborn in a way. He is 100% cut from that cloth. He has followed so much of what Billy trained and taught him, and he is from the ground up a student of Billy Robinson and Yuko Miyato, and I've also had the pleasure over the years to train Hideki as well. The guy is fantastic, and he is a legitimate catch wrestler.
Yeah, you know, I spent a lot of time, as you well know, because you're the guy who helped me help make it. You made the introduction, and you know, I'll always be grateful for that. But I did my best to try to document Billy and do all this kind of stuff. And you know, we got a lot of footage and a lot of good stuff, and him breaking things down. And I remember it was a couple years after he passed, and you told me about Suzuki's book that he put out, which is in Japanese. I don't even know the freaking title. You'd have to go on like Amazon.com.jp.
Yeah, and you can order it from Amazon.jp, and there is an English component to Amazon.jp.
Yeah,
by the way, people.
That's how I found it. That's exactly how.
Miyato's book or
yes.
Hideki's book. Both of them are absolutely phenomenal. When it comes to a resource for catch.
Okay. Well, I mean, I really enjoyed Miyato's book. Miyato's book is very good, but it's very basic. It's the very basics of Carl's stuff. When you told me about Suzuki's book and I got that, I mean, I had a whole plan, not because I could make any money or anything like that. I was just going to try to put it in book form, but I totally scrapped it. I'm like, there's no way to improve on what Suzuki has done here. That book.
It's such a killer book.
It's
bigger, and it's got a decent size for all the photos, the way the layout.
The layout is amazing.
Agent. Yeah. I talked to my Japanese agent to say, hey, I want to connect with these guys and do my own book.
Yeah. That layout, it's really neat because it's almost like they have a real cool artist doing the design, but they're basically using like decision trees, which is kind of how Billy would teach. It's like, if this don't work, go this way. If this don't work, and it branches off. It's a great, and it's very, I mean, I tried to be as much of a hard ass as Billy is with regards to what he taught me and how to do it and the pivot and da 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 da, all that shit. I mean, I'm really do my best. And I mean, I go over shit with a fine tooth comb. I'm really anal. I mean, I'm a mathematician. I'm like a nerd. And that book, there's no way you can improve upon that book that Suzuki put out. I mean, so you guys got to get to this seminar with Josh. What's the best website for people to get to that?
Simply put, it's on Eventbrite.
Eventbrite.
Look it up. And plus, it's all over my Twitter and Instagram feeds.
Okay.
So
okay.
It should be pretty. And it's on any of the catch wrestling Facebook pages as well. So if it's all out there, man, it is on that internet.
Yeah. Okay, good. I mean, people, you got to go to this, truly, especially for Josh. I mean, you know, Josh is all over the place, and trust me, I know better than anybody, he's hard to get a hold of sometimes because he's so busy traveling and everything else. But not only are you going to get Josh, but you're going to get Hideki Suzuki, who really is very, very technical on Billy's style. Very technical. My highest recommendation. Let's come back after the break because I want to talk a little bit about pro wrestling with you. I want to talk a little bit about MMA. And I want to also talk, you also are doing this Beat the Streets LA thing with Olympic gold medalist Helen Maroulis this weekend. What is that all about?
Well, it is a nonprofit to try and get wrestling into the hands basically of underprivileged kids, try and get these kids out here that are struggling for an opportunity to exert themselves and express who they are and be an athlete, and bringing wrestling to them, and try to expand upon the influence that wrestling can have by and large. And to be honest, I couldn't think of anything better to put my time to, because I, as corny and maybe cliched as it sounds, and biased, which I'll admit it is, I don't think there's anything better for the populace at large and young kids growing up than to wrestle.
Damn right.
It's better than any other sport out there. It gives more to an individual and to a team than any other sport will. I will put that I'll argue that point against anyone.
Well, you know, it's interesting because it is a team sport, but it's different than a lot of team sports insofar as that it's truly your individual performance that matters. It's not like you could just sit in the backfield and not do anything. I mean, it's you have to perform. So that's amazing, dude. That's so cool. So people could just, do you happen to know the website for Beat the Streets? If people are streaming it, or if
that's a good question, it should be pretty easy to find. I think it's beatthestreetsla.com.
Okay.
It's beatthestreets-la.org.
So beatthestreets-la.org. Okay, cool. All right. Well, hang on, guys, because I want to get back. I want to talk to Josh about his time, not just calling the action like he's doing this weekend, and not just doing pro wrestling, but some of his favorite moments from MMA and you know, his thoughts on the state of both the current sport of MMA and the current state of pro wrestling. Hang in there. We'll be right back. The Do It Again podcast, talking with Josh Barnett today. Okay, thanks guys for visiting our sponsors. They definitely help us keep the lights on around here. I mean, we're a pretty low budget show, but it's still every little click and patronage.
Even
of our
lower budget now that you got me on here.
No, you know, I think you're probably our biggest guy so far. So I can tell you a little bit about the state of the world of catch, but no, you're a huge name, dude. I mean, so. First of all the stuff you did in MMA, the thing that's crazy to me is that, you're like 40 this year? Is that right?
41.
And you've already been...
I still haven't learned my lesson. That's the problem. Man, how can we keep doing this dumb shit? I could just claim CTE, I suppose.
Well, you could make that claim. I mean, I don't understand how for 22 years you've stayed at the very top of the chart of people who's relevant in MMA from what you started, 97, right?
First fight in 97, yeah. I was training in 96.
Jesus, man. That is some crazy longevity. And, I mean, you've taken hard shots from tough guys. I mean, like Krokop. And, I mean, you are truly superhuman. Just your durability over time is amazing.
I'm a level of stupid that it works in reverse. It's like that I'm so dumb that I don't know that I'm supposed to be dumber. I guess that's
what I'm trying to go with it. Oh, yeah. What do they call that? The that effect? I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Dunning-Kruger?
Yeah.
I'm just Dunning-Kruger. I would like to say I'm more, it's more like Camus is right. The world is absurd, and I am proof of it.
Yeah, but man, listen. Okay, I'm just going to tell you something. You're doing something right. You're in movies with Steven Seagal. I mean, literally, you've picked up heavyweight gold in every competitive organization. I mean, you know, I'm not one or whatever, but I mean, during your time, you were out there like charging hard, dude. 22 years. So, I mean, what was your inspiration then? You know, what was it that was like, you could have, you know, that decision tree, man, because I know you had a chance to play football, you had a real kind of easy path maybe to do football, but you didn't. You got inspired. Something got in your head and set you on this path that you're still blazing today. What is that? Do you know? Do you remember?
It's just my nature. So seeing the UFC as a sophomore in high school, watching UFC 2 on a tape, I I didn't realize that such a thing like this could exist. And of course, being a fan of all the martial arts films, pro wrestling, and you know, Street Fighter 2, and all these different things that the original movie Bloodsport, all this stuff that was all throughout pop culture,
yeah,
has always drawn the interest of other you know, fans of martial arts and fights, and just, I mean, people would just, even random individuals would just go, hey, this guy's a karate black belt, you wouldn't want to mess with him. Oh yeah, well, this guy's a kung fu black kung fu red sash, so he's even badder. Oh, this other guy, you know, just the conversation of, well, what would happen if you opened it up so that anybody could fight anybody and use all of their talents or all of their skills that they can have on demand. That's what the UFC is, and that's what it was. And there was so much pop culture that was all derived from that concept, and now to see it in action. But to me, the idea of being able to go out there and fight another human being was the most competitive thing you could do in this world, besides literally go to war or something. I mean, this was the pinnacle. That was the ultimate. And it was the ultimate fighting championship. I fell for the propaganda hook, line, and sinker. And I still believe that fighting is still the most competitive game that you can play, for the most part. And it's a part of who I am. It's just the way I'm built. I'm designed for it in one way or the other. More, I would say, about the way my mind is built more than anything physically. But
well, your physical attributes, I mean, have, which also include your mind, because, I mean, you're definitely a tactician. You're definitely, you know, like, your submission ratio on wins is like off the charts and stuff. So, I mean, I know you're being self-deprecating, but you've had just one hell of a freaking run. And what's so cool is, I mean, you're relatively young. I mean, you're as a professional athlete, you're kind of bumping up against some biological barriers. But the thing that's interesting to me about your perspective is you were there before it was a sport, but, you know, before it got sanctioned by the state as a sport. And it was just these, like, kind of crazy challenge matches that were trying to create a promotion. Then all of a sudden the government and all the regulations and all the agencies and all this bullshit got involved. Anyway, I want to know your perspective, like, on that 22 years. What do you make of the change from how you started to where it's, what it's like today? What's the differences that you really see, that you've experienced?
Well, it's streamlined itself, for one. And when you watch a UFC fight, let's just specifically use them, it becomes, there's not a whole lot that's surprising anymore. And everybody has gamed themselves to perform within the format as it exists. All systems will be gamed by all players every single time.
Yeah, given enough time, yeah.
So, as the athletes have become more skilled, more adept, more knowledgeable, I would say, about the game itself and the patterns that are best employed, 5 minutes is not enough time anymore. And it's funny, because I think going back in some ways and creating a bit more dynamic environment, as it used to be, would actually benefit the sport as a whole. At the very least, let's say the Pride format of 10, 5, and 5 for round times, with a 2 minute rest, and, or I think one night tournaments would be highly useful for establishing interest and creativity, but also, the fact that every combat sport in the world has a one night tournament still, yet MMA doesn't anymore. You know, they got this idea that that's not possible. People can't do that anymore. It's too dangerous. That's bullshit, and I don't buy it at all. But it also gives you an opportunity to shake up the doldrum. You know, you have a Grand Prix every year. You run it over one night or two nights, and boom, new stars are made.
Right.
New things happen. New drama emerges, you know? And it to me, like things like that being removed from MMA have actually been part of what I feel is a big downturn over the last like 5 years at least. And it have been a part of why it's become somewhat stale, to be honest. But that's also not that, that to me is not like, oh, look how it's failing and it's sucking and it's no. All systems need renewal. That's just the way it is.
Yep.
Because given long enough, they fall to entropy.
Yep.
All things fall to entropy. Human beings, I have a theory or an idea of the concept of human entropy. There's no escaping the concept of entropy. And so you need to, as the systems become more and more gamed, as they become pattern ingrained in such a pattern that they don't really differentiate themselves or allow for the ability to differentiate themselves properly, you have to go in there and you have to alter it.
Who, I mean, I could tell you my favorite match of yours is not an MMA match. It's actually the Dean Lister match. And to me, that's because that is the match I've seen you just straight up go straight catch wrestling. I didn't see any of the other stuff that you study. And I know you study a lot of other things, but you fly the catch banner. But that seemed to me like, from my experience and what my knowledge base is, the most pure catch thing you've ever done. But I'm talking MMA. I mean, I honestly, that match with Arlovsky was off the charts. That was a truly great match. But my personal favorite is Yoshida, because that's just an epic match with so much story. But I want to know what your favorite match of yours is. And maybe it's more than one.
My favorite match is probably the Yuki Kondo fight, because it was the Pancrase 10th anniversary. It was Ryogoku Kokugikan, the sumo hall where Pancrase had its original King of Pancrase tournament that one night. Matt Hume, my original MMA coach, he competed in the first King of Pancrase tournament and he lost to Minoru Suzuki. Then I come back around 10 years later and I go and I capture the King of Pancrase title in a fight against Yuki Kondo. And, you know, I was there. Waving the banner and the flag of New Japan Pro Wrestling. I had the New Japan Pro Wrestling guys in my corner. It was a really incredible and very emotional moment that encapsulated a whole bunch of what it was that I was doing as an MMA fighter and my legacy and the roots of where I came from as a professional wrestler, really, as a pro wrestler that's a shooter and a worker. And it was, that was a zenith of that kind of idea. But the Arlovsky fight was also pretty badass to fight another UFC champ. In fact, I've, when it's come down to me versus other former UFC champions, I think I've won every single one of those fights. So that's nice to keep that record going, but also, using my grappling to be the only person to ever submit Andrei Arlovsky.
Well, and well, what's so cool
with that double wrist lock, but boy, he's a strong guy and he managed to finagle his way out of it only to get caught in that choke. So
I mean, me personally, and I'm sorry this happened to you, but the greatest fucking part of that whole match is when he eye poked you. It seemed like he just fucking woke up the fucking War Master, and that you just fucking were like, fuck this, and you just went to town. That was, to me, I'm sorry you got eye poked. I know that had to fucking suck bad, but like, dude, that was so epic. I mean, it's just like, that happened, and then you just fucking turned it on. It was a real story told, almost like a pro wrestling story, but in an MMA match, to me anyway. That's definitely one of my favorite of your matches that you've ever had.
I forget exactly even how the eye poke happened. It was a really, how would you, innocuous thing. As far as I could tell, and I, from remembering seeing it, it looked completely just happenstance, right? And it could happen.
I don't think he did it on purpose.
I have no idea. It didn't
look like it.
No, and so, but I mean, he came charging after me, threw a couple big heavy shots. I realized that the ref was not going to intervene, all right, well, I can't really see that well out of this eye now, but he shoved his arm right in there. As soon as he charged forward to try and knock me out, he ended up clinching with me for just a minute, and he stuck that arm in there. And, you know, I've taken down the biggest and strongest dude you can find with that double wrist lock. And it was just, he, I'm sure, to his credit, I'm sure nobody does this to him. And so it wasn't even a consideration that he was really putting himself in danger. And, you know, I, for me, it was just like putting a rib in front of my face. I'm going to bite down on this, and it's coming home.
All right. Well, hold on. We're going to be right back with more from Josh Barnett. I want to talk a little bit about this blood sport show you're promoting. Looks super awesome. I mean, one hell of a card. Really good job on booking that. Guys, stay tuned. We got Josh Barnett, the Do It Again podcast. We'll be right back. All right, we have returned from our break. Thank you for patronizing our sponsors. It really does matter. Thank you for that. I want to talk, Josh, about pro wrestling, because I know it's very special to you. I did pro wrestling. I love pro wrestling, but I also love all forms of grappling, MMA, all that kind of stuff. But pro wrestling's its own thing. And it's kind of like catch wrestling. There's many varieties, many rule sets, many approaches, you know, strong style, this, that. I mean, there's so many different things. But I want to, because you have a unique perspective, not only as a successful MMA guy, but I mean, so you wrestled for New Japan in around 2003, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't know this. You tag teamed with Perry Saturn. How did I not know this?
I don't know. Yeah, I tag teamed with Perry. He was the first guy that they paired me up with. And the idea was that the vet would help the green boy, me, help lead me through the ropes and guide me. And Perry was really helpful in helping me learn the ropes of professional wrestling. He's a great tag partner. And he had a really fantastic open mind to learning new stuff. So he would come to me and go, hey, show me some stuff. Oh, you know, teach me this or teach me that. Or you know, I'd watch him do something and go, oh, hey, guess what? You could add this little piece or that piece. And he was completely open to the idea of incorporating new stuff. And I thought it was just awesome. And that experience of touring on the road with New Japan was it was like a dream every day. You know, I didn't know how to run the ropes. Masahiro Chono showed me how to run the ropes. I had Christopher Daniels teaching me how to take arm drags and throw them in the pro wrestling sense. I had Mike Barton working with me on stuff. I mean, I had Yuji Nagata teaching me. Jushin Thunder Liger is the man who taught me how to sell. Liger and Antonio Inoki are the people that taught me selling. In fact, Inoki is one of the people responsible for teaching me imparting the philosophy of professional wrestling down. He mentored me in New Japan. So a lot of what I do is he's responsible for it. But I would be remiss to ever discount the big help that I got from people like Jushin Thunder Liger and Yuji Nagata while training in New Japan.
It's a shame. I saw something about Perry Saturn to go back to him. I mean, he's really not doing well, man. I mean, he's like all withered away and like got a bunch of bad health issues. It's kind of sad. I met him one time after a show here in Denver because one of our guys was Enhancement Town, you know, doing a dark match or whatever while they were in town. This is like 2000 when all those guys come over from WCW. And that guy is the craziest dude. He is such a nice guy, too. He was totally cool. I'm just some freaking indie pro wrestler that, you know, is in the backstage. And I kind of started talking to him, and he broke his arm in his match that night, his forearm. And he's sitting there with like a crappy medical, you know, not like a doctor's cast, like one of those cheap ones that the EMTs give you, drinking a beer, pop at Vicodins, and he's like, man, you got to take me out. And I was like, oh, geez, okay, how do you turn down Perry Saturn? So the sad, literally into a parking garage. I'm like, how do you miss, how do you, a parking garage is not easy to miss. I mean, but the nicest guy, so nice, but tougher in hell. Holy shit. Didn't he split his head open or something during a match? Or that guy's wild.
It may be, man. Perry is tough as nails. And, you know, this game, wrestling is real hard on people.
Yeah.
There's just no getting around it. Perry's had some difficulties in life, and wrestling isn't always the thing that helps you best with these things. So it is what it is, and it's a hard sport to it's a hard thing to be a part of. Wrestling will just it'll wear you down, break you apart.
And it's so consuming. Like, there's this meme going around about wrestling being like the mafia, and you try to get out and you get dragged in. And I can testify to that, man. I mean, I can't tell you, honestly, how many times I've kind of tried to back out and you just get pulled back in.
Well, I mean, hell, pro wrestling pulled you into this crap.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, it's such a weird, it's so weird because it really takes such a dominant part of your mind and your life and your soul. It's a fascinating subject. So we kind of talked about your view on the state of MMA briefly, but I want to talk about your view on pro wrestling, why you booked your card this way with Bloodsport coming up. What makes you want to be so involved with professional wrestling as it is today, this performance, this exhibition, as opposed to competition? I mean, you're a competitive accolades, or, you know, anybody can watch, pick up a fucking video or get on YouTube and see all the crazy shit you've accomplished competitively. What is it about the pro wrestling? And maybe it goes into your acting as well. Is there, why are you involved with pro wrestling?
That's a really simple question to answer, Jake.
All right.
I'm an idiot. The biggest reason is I am an idiot. I'm a glutton for punishment. And I love doing things for minimal amounts of money or recognition. So I guess it depends on who you'd ask if they'd even believe such a thing. But I really love professional wrestling.
I know you do.
To me, pro wrestling is it's responsible for everything about who I am as far as a fighter. It's been such a huge part of my life. It is, and I look at pro wrestling as a coin, and working and shooting is just one side or the other. So for me, being a part of the working side of it is just as important as being a part of the shooting side of it. And I really honor and respect all that history of professional wrestling from when it was legit all the time to when it even became working, and the people and the history that I've inherited through New Japan Pro Wrestling, Antonio Inoki, Carl Gotch, Billy Robinson. These things are huge to me, and they are so important that I try to keep these things alive. Not to mention, to me, the way I see wrestling is it's a very simple thing, and we've gotten really far, quite far away from what makes it so important and so easy to tell such a great story. You know, it's not about how many flips you do or how cool of a move or how long your match is or even how many times an audience pops. It's deeper than that, and yet it's simpler.
Well, I've been, you know, I'm not a fan of the big brands, but I will say, you know, and I'm talking in the United States. I don't think New Japan is like a huge brand in the United States. Obviously, worldwide, they're huge. They're probably number two or number three. I think that
chain. They're probably number two. They're easily the number two promotion in the world.
In terms of like gates and cash flow and all that kind of stuff. And it sometimes changes, but they're huge. But in the States, not a lot of people. They're still, WWE is the big brand in the WWE or in the United States. Everybody knows this. I don't like the Raw and SmackDown stuff so much. But man, NXT is really good. I mean, not everybody, but obviously Shayna is killing it. The women's division is quite good. But guys like Roderick Strong and guys like this Aleister Black and Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, what I love about it is this kind of work rate that is a realistic work rate. They're not this same old shit where somebody punches you and then mugs around to the crowd and stomps and, you know, talks to the crowd. It's like they're treating it like a legit shoot, even though it's not.
Yeah, to some degree, there's far much more of that in NXT than other places you'll find on the major circuits in the U.S. I mean, they could even stand to do more, in my opinion. But, you know, I realize my biases. But I watched Ciampa and Velveteen Dream start off a match with just, and they were just doing mat wrestling.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. And,
yes.
You know, I didn't know much about either of them, even less about this Velveteen Dream guy. And there he's out there hitting drags and switches and all this stuff. And I'm going, this is what I'm always talking about. I mean, there's so much of a story you can tell, especially with the fact that if you're really trying to win, then you should actually be wrestling this person. You should be trying to pin them, get an advantage. I mean, it's just a simple thing. If you want both athletes to appear as if they're competent and capable, plus at which point you can show who's better where and how that could come to play against them at some point, it's super easy, man. Just get it going and have a little emphasis here, a little emphasis there, even just a little slip up and, oh, you cranked your own knee somehow, whatever. You got off balance. And that could be the whole turning point of the start of whatever heat or anything that starts happening. And well, nobody has to look like a champ, like a chump.
I think that a lot of what we're seeing now, this NXT, and I'm seeing it at some of these indie shows, of that kind of style that we're talking about, this faster work rate, this more realistic wrestling. I think that's a direct result of mixed martial arts. I think that the fans, there's a crossover base between pro wrestling and MMA. Now people actually know what a real fucking fight looks like, and it's kind of forcing the WWE's hands to create a better product. I mean, because
not to mention the fact that I think that, like anything, once we talked about systems going to entropy, you keep doing the same shit over and over and over and over and over and over again. It ceases to become interesting. It's no longer, everything starts to become just a copy of itself. It's just, I guess it's a little bit like, I mean, Rene Girard would talk about it being mimetic desire. So everybody sees some guy doing something and he gets over with it. So everybody just
does that.
The same thing.
Yeah.
It becomes then eventually that leads to stagnation.
Well, I also think that there's, you said doing the same thing over and over again, and not just in terms of techniques or the way the matches play out, but I mean, WWE is very, very smart. They've seemed to convince UFC that they're not a competitor. But honestly, UFC is just another form of pro wrestling. I mean, in my opinion,
shooting.
That's yeah, all. It's a no pinfall submission cage match. But that's the same match they're selling everybody every time. Meanwhile, WWE is like, okay, I got cage matches, I got tables, ladders, and chairs, I got freaking hardcore matches. They have this, it's like a variety show that's always interesting. Now, I'm just throwing out the whole work shoot thing for now. MMA is doing the same show every time. I just don't see that they could compete in this age where attention is the real commodity here. They can't keep people's attention like WWE. And I think to the point that WWE is straight competition is why they're booking all these top guys, like MMA guys like Shayna, like Brock Lesnar, like Ronda Rousey, like Jack Swagger, legit competitive people like Swagger or Kurt Angle, because they are competitive. It's just this whole subtle difference between working and shooting. So, I mean, I want to talk about what people could expect at Bloodsport, because given your propensity for that style pro wrestling, your love for pro wrestling. You booked a crazy awesome card. I mean, you got Frank Mir, who I never thought I'd see on a pro wrestling. Has he ever done a pro wrestling? Has he ever done it? Like a pro wrestling show?
No, he has not. This will be his his debut in professional wrestling.
I mean, you got Tom Lawler, you got Dan Severn.
We actually had Tom Lawler. Unfortunately, due to his commitments to MLW, he will not be able to make our show.
Oh, no.
He will now be replaced with Chris Dickinson.
I'll tell you who I really was excited about. And this is only a guy I've seen on Impact because he actually likes a bunch of my weird... I post weird shit on Instagram, and he likes all of it. So.
No, never.
Yeah, Killer Cross, dude. That is going to be awesome. Who is he booked against?
He's booked against Davey Boy Smith Jr.
Oh, my God. Dude.
Behemoths.
Oh, my God. Awesome. That is going to be amazing. So, again, Fight TV. What's the date? It's the 4th. Is that right?
The 4th, yeah.
Okay. So, guys, go get the Fight TV app, or I'm sure Fight.tv, FITE.tv. You can watch it online as well. That's going to be amazing. And then again this week, everybody, be sure to tune in beatthestreets-la.org. So beatthestreets-la. You and Helen Marulis. I've seen some pictures of you two guys together. I mean, do you guys know each other well, or how did that come about?
Yeah, we know each other. She's I've ran some practices with her and them before, and she also works a lot with my best friend and one of my absolute top students, Eric Hammer,
and
her strength conditioning work and other things.
Awesome. Wow. That's brilliant. Okay, guys. So this weekend, catch Josh at beatthestreets-la.org. That's Sunday, right? March 31st?
Yes.
Okay. And then, like 4 days later or whatever, you've got your show in New Jersey.
Yes, and my seminar with Hideki Suzuki on the 3rd. So, this is a big week. I've got press I'm hitting out there. I'll be on ESPN and ABC. I'm doing as much as I can to not just promote myself, but when I go out there and I hit these markets, the thing is, what I bring with me is I'm bringing catch wrestling. I'm bringing the stuff that we're into. I want to better highlight just amateur wrestling to anyone that will listen, but also how amateur wrestling can go to amateur catch wrestling and eventually to professional catch wrestling or MMA or pro wrestling at large, and to try and even put my philosophy that is highly influenced by mentors like Carl and Billy and Inoki of how we view professional wrestling, how I was trained as a professional wrestler, and to get that out there into that in that miasma again, and hopefully have some of it rub off and penetrate into these other guys and gals that are out there doing professional wrestling. That, you know, it's not, everything doesn't have to be just gimmicks out the wazoo and over the top presentation to the point of obnoxiousness. You can develop who you are with a lot less than you think you need. As long as you do it like you mean it.
And you don't have to bump every 2 seconds. I mean, dude.
You don't.
That's the stupidest thing. You don't see it in NXT. I mean, I hope that's the future of the big brand. And I love what you're doing. You know, one other random appearance was you in freaking Logan, dude. Like, I'm watching Logan, and then you're on the back of a comic book as a catch wrestler. I mean, it's like so weird.
Thank Dan Panosian, who on Instagram and Twitter is at Urban Barbarian, and he's a comic artist who works with Marvel and covers for Marvel and DC, and he's even produced his own books. Like, he's got one out called Slots from I don't remember the name of the publishing company, but it's a graphic novel. It's fantastic. It's a really great read, especially if you're into old time sort of throwback stories of ne'er-do-wells, but who are quite charming and get themselves wrapped up in all kinds of misadventure. And it takes place in Vegas. But Dan, that was him. He's created some flyers for me for my seminars, and he just took one of them and altered them up and put them on the back of these comic books that they made for the movie to emulate, you know, the old school look of an 80s comic book and all the goofball ads you find in them.
Well, I think on top of all of your accomplishments, I think I could crown you, at least in my little universe, the king of the double take. Because I'm like always like having to double take, and I'm like, wait, that is Josh. What the hell? This is a random place for you to show up.
Random and weird, man. It's always coming around me at every time. I am on a variant cover for Deadpool also that was drawn by Dave Johnson.
Oh my God, that is so cool. Okay, one last question, and you've been very gracious with your time, and I really appreciate that. Dude, how cool was it working with Jim Ross, dude? Was that cool or what?
It was a blast. I mean, I was so worried when Mauro went to the WWE. Proud, because you know us sitting down and doing that work was what piqued their interest to want to grab him in the first place. But then I'm thinking, what am I going to do? Who's going to be my co-host now? This is, it's so much up in the air. And then when Jim Ross landed, and I knew JR from prior to that, you know, I wouldn't say that we were super close, but we were friends. We knew each other and we had a bunch of mutual friends as well, but getting to sit in the booth with him and all the knowledge I was able to soak up from that man, he's fantastic, and I loved every minute of having him as my partner, all the way to the point of, you know, jumping up and defending him when I felt like it was need be. And,
yeah, that was epic, dude. You know, that was awesome.
He is he's my bud, and I'm always on his side and looking to help him out and promote anything he does.
I mean, those matches that you guys called, especially the matches you called with Kushida. I mean, I think those are my favorite matches from that time period. The matches you were calling, especially the ones for Kushida.
Oh,
those
some of mine, too. Kushida was brilliant, and Shibata.
Shibata, yeah. Man, Kushida, he got signed for WWE, though, right?
I believe so, yeah. There's been a big exodus at New Japan after last year.
Yeah, man. I hope they can work him right, dude. I hope he gets in, because he would kill it in NXT, man. I hope they don't rush him up to the big show. He's amazing.
Yeah, I just hope that they let him breathe, man, the way that he knows how. He's great.
Yeah. Hey, Josh, thanks, dude. I really appreciate it. People, you need to get over to Josh's Twitter. It's, Josh, at Josh L, like the letter L, like Lemmy and Motorhead, Josh L Barnett, right?
Yes, exactly. Same on Instagram.
On Instagram too, and so if you guys need to get any of this contact info for these, the seminar with him and Suzuki, Hideki Suzuki, or to get to the show and actually buy a ticket to see it live. It looks amazing. You could see the full card. He's got it up on his Instagram and stuff. And then this Sunday, beatthestreets-la.org with Helen Maroulis, Olympic gold medalist. Man, that's awesome stuff. Thanks, Josh. I appreciate your time, man.
Been fun, dude.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, that does it, man.